morning, everyone, and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockbank.com, and he'll take those questions at the end of the call. Today on the call, we have John Portwood, Chief Investment Officer, David Lundgren, Jeffrey Tangus, and Luther McDougall, all investment directors. And with that, I'm going to pass the call on to the moderator, David Lundgren.
Thanks, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us once again for our monthly economic update call. And an obvious question is in regards to the election. And what we've decided to do, since today is Election Day, it happened to fall on our normally scheduled first Tuesday of the month, we're having a special post-election call on Thursday, November 8th, at 3 o'clock. So we're going to hold off on any election, tax-related, fiscal cliff questions until November 8th, and hopefully we have an outcome to the election on that date, and we'll go from there. So today we're really going to focus more on the economy and markets, and John, I'll start with you. Maybe just kind of a general economic update. Third quarter GDP, a little bit stronger than expected, but came in at a, below trend line growth, what we've seen for an extended period of time at 2%. So if you could, give us a little color around the economy here in the U.S.
Okay, well, I guess the simplest thing to say that encapsulates the whole issue is that we continue to muddle through. We've been talking about muddling through now for quite some time, and I guess that's still probably the best description of what's going on. When the economists, you know, looked at the last report, GDP report, and examined what the underlying statistics looked like, they found that consumer spending appeared to be carrying the day recently, while corporate investment was a weak spot and has continued to really be a weak spot for a number of months now. So, you know, it looks like this 2% plus or minus world will continue for a while without a substantial, you know, change in the environment or some sort of catalyst that might, you know, send us one way or the other. From a recession standpoint, there are no signals out there that would suggest a recession is imminent. Although when you look back in history at how often, particularly in the last 10 years or so, that GDP numbers have been revised, it is, I guess, conceivable that the NBER could look back in time and find a quarter or two that we've been through recently that was actually much closer to zero than the estimates that we're seeing today, because some of this data can be revised pretty substantially. But bottom line, almost all of the leading indicators are still rising. They're not rising very quickly, but it suggests that, you know, the economy is still moving forward in some fashion. So, you know, we'll just have to see how things develop going forward, but at least it looks like, you know, we're still in a growth mode, however slow it might be.
And I guess 2% here in the U.S. is a little bit better than what's going on in Europe.
Yeah, the Europeans are in pretty bad shape from a growth standpoint. I'm not sure exactly what the current estimate is for the depth of the recession in Europe. I'm guessing now it's sort of in a minus 1% area. I've seen estimates as low as minus 2.5% for the European region next year. And in fact, I'm aware of at least one forecast that suggests the European region may still be in a recession or a pretty flat economic environment into 2014. So they're in much worse shape than we are. So far, it's been somewhat surprising that we haven't had more bleed over, I guess, you know, more pressure on our economy relative to what's been happening in Europe. But they're certainly in relatively poor shape economically. The current data on the sovereign debt crisis hasn't gotten a lot better either. As we all know, it's more of a solvency issue than a liquidity issue, and they haven't done more than simply put in stopgap measures to avoid something really bad happening over there. More and more, everyone seems to agree that Greece has no capability of climbing back on their own, and they'll probably have to leave the euro or or be a a supported basket case, I guess, for years. And there are still issues about Spain and France and Italy and the others. So I guess that problem is going to be with us for a while longer.
Okay. Shift focus a little bit to the jobs reports that recently came out, and I think they got a fair amount of publicity in light of the upcoming election. And, you know, I think it's more of the same, some progress but slow. The payroll data increased about 170,000 jobs. Unemployment rate ticked up slightly to 7.9%, and then initial jobless claims came in at 363,000. You know, basically in line with its four-week average. So any progress or any hope going forward in terms of employment?
It looks like the current trend in place is likely to continue for a while. And if you go back and look at increases in the level of employment since the recession in 2009, it's been fairly steady. It's just been very slow. I think the average monthly employment gain, something like 150,000 on average, I believe that's pretty accurate since the recession in 2009. That's barely enough to take care of new entrants into the labor force. So, you know, at this rate, it would take a number of years before the unemployment rate got down to what we might consider a more acceptable level or something relatively normal. The bad thing about the recent employment report was that it appears to indicate that a lot more temporary jobs are being created than permanent jobs, and hours worked declined a bit, and disposable personal income didn't rise at all. And the disposable personal income growth has been, you know, a pretty weak factor in the economy now for quite some time, and that really hasn't improved very much at all. So again, it all goes back to this muddle through environment with relatively slow growth, slow employment growth, and so forth, and just pretty indicative of a fairly long workout period, which I suppose is not unusual considering how big the credit bust was. So basically, Dave, as you indicated, it's like not a great deal of change.
One thing I'd point out too, John, is that I've been hearing more and more about the effect that Obamacare is going to be having on full-time employment, in that if somebody works over 30 hours a week, you have to supply them health care.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Every day I hear more and more reports from corporations saying, well, we're just going to hire a lot more people who work less than 30 hours a week. So I think that's going to be a big factor in the labor market going forward.
John, let's talk about the stock market. The S&P 500 was down 1.8% for the month, first decline since May of this year for our monthly data. Year-to-date, still pretty strong number at 14.3%. And, we're getting near the end of third quarter reporting season. And for the first time, we really, if you look at the year-over-year data, both revenue growth and earnings growth have turned over. Year-over-year growth for both is basically flat, which I think is kind of in line with expectations. But give us your thoughts on the stock market, what we've seen, the last month and so far this year, and maybe where we're heading from here.
We talked about valuation a lot in the past, and I think in the last few months, we've generally, every time we've had these conversations, brought up what the valuation picture looked like. It hasn't really changed a lot in the last several months. If you look out, say, over the next 5 years and maybe the next 10 years, given the last 100, 150 years of history, you can make a reasonable guess that at current valuation levels, market index returns would be somewhere in the, say, mid-single-digit range, I suppose, over a long period of time. In the short run, of course, while these long-run estimates in the past have proven to be, pretty good guesstimates of what might happen in the short run, it's really hard to make, a real precise estimate of what stocks are worth or what might happen, just because psychology drives the market a lot in the near term. But as Dave mentioned, we're seeing spotty earnings reports. We're seeing forecasts of revenue growth that are not particularly exciting, and forecasts of stock earnings generally are beginning to come down from what they were. It still looks like, without recession, we're probably in a positive earnings growth mode for, you know, a great number of industries and stocks. It's just much slower than what everyone would probably like. In that regard, it probably means also that we, and we've talked about this the last few months too, that we're probably, you know, at a point for the major market indices where making a lot of upward progress is going to be, it's going to be kind of difficult probably under these circumstances, unless we got a big change in price earnings multiples that made stock returns a little better than expected, better than what would be expected in the future. But right now, we think it looks pretty moderate in the absence of recession. We're probably not looking at a great deal of risk on the downside either. So a lot really depends on what's going to happen in 2013 and, you know, whether or not the cycle ends. You know, right now, looking at the economy, it looks like the cycle is not going to end anytime soon. So, you know, without a recession and without a significant setback in the economy, then we probably ought to continue this sort of muddle-through situation. But it always comes down to individual securities and individual sectors and industries in our mind, and probably, you know, making choices and being selective is going to turn out to be more important going forward than it has been in the last 12 months.
Jeff Tangus.
Good morning.
Hey, let's talk about interest rates a little bit. I'm looking at a price graph of the 10-year, and it's amazing the last 3 months you've had really very little movement in interest rates. The 10-year has been kind of hanging around in that 1.6-1.7% range for, I guess, about 3 months now. So nothing real exciting there. Anything you'd like to talk about in terms of movement in interest rates, either in the long end of the curve or the short end of the curve?
Well, you summed it up well there. It's been very quiet, and it's gotten even more quiet as we get closer to the election. I think the Federal Reserve realized they needed to step to the sideline. You know, you heard almost nothing out of them the last month or two as they since the last meeting, as they've tried not to be a political factor here. So the interest rate markets have been fairly quiet, and like you say, there has not really been much change either way in terms of interest rates. Mortgage rates continue to hover around record lows. I think somewhere in the 350, 360 range, I believe, is kind of where a 30-year mortgage is these days. So the Fed's program of keeping mortgage rates low to juice the housing market seems to be working. Obviously, we're getting better news out of the housing market, and that is that's good news all the way around. It's actually been most apparent, I think, in the balance sheets of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two big quasi-governmental organizations that are really producing all of the mortgages now, for the most part, in America. And that both of them have recently announced that with housing prices improving and their fortunes improving as well, that they're not going to need federal assistance going forward unless the economy slows down pretty dramatically. So another sign that the economy is improving and manifesting itself in the interest rate markets as well. So the Fed is continuing on its program of putting $40 billion to work each month in mortgage securities. When they have things mature, they're out buying longer-term securities. So, again, that's keeping longer rates low. So I suspect it's going to continue that way. The market is anticipating at this point an Obama victory. So in that sense, I think if Obama gets elected, it'll be steady as she goes. But for the most part, been very quiet in the interest rate markets.
Okay. Luther, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Morning.
Morning.
Hurricane Sandy, I guess that's been a big news event the last week or so. Talk a little bit about the economic impact of what we've seen so far, what we're expecting.
Well, it's a good question, but the answers are all controversial. There's several different schools of thought as to whether it's a positive or a net negative or even just a wash. But overall, the preliminary numbers, and they're still coming in and they're still growing, it looks like Sandy, as far as property and casualty damage, runs in the range of around $30 billion. Then there's another $20 billion in lost economic activity as that part of the country shut down for several days. So you're looking at a total impact of around $50 billion. Just as a point of reference for those of us in this area, Katrina was estimated at about $150 billion. So it's still Sandy still caused a lot of damage, not to the same extent as what we saw down here, but it was in a much more populous area with a much greater GDP. Now, you know, the $30 billion in property and casualty damages will not be reflected in the economic numbers. It's just lost value. The $20 billion in lost economic activity will be represented in the numbers, and it looks like up front that it could impact fourth quarter GDP by anywhere from 0.3 to even 0.5 of 1%. So that 2% number may drop to 1.5 or even a little bit lower for the fourth quarter GDP. A lot of economists make the case that because the damage is not all covered by insurance, approximately about half of it is covered by insurance, it, of course, is a net negative to the economy. On the other hand, you can also make the case that it's kind of a wash. Anything that we lost as far as the economic activity in the fourth quarter will be pushed back into the first quarter of next year. The damages, property and casualty, as we well know down here, is not going to bounce back in one quarter. Some of it may, but it could take two, three, even five years for that to actually happen. So that would be kind of a wash between the first quarter and the current quarter and the first quarter of next year. The other school of thought is that if you start from the very beginning with the thousands or millions of dollars worth of bread, batteries, water, et cetera, sold pre-hurricane, and then you take into consideration that a lot of this is covered by insurance, and the fact that we will be upgrading not only the existing structures such as the roads, the electricity lines, we'll be rebuilding houses and refurnishing contents, new cars, all of these are replacing, in general, older material with newer material and upgrading the overall value of the existing stock. So there's one school of thought that says that the hurricane, and I'm not saying this, someone else is actually a net economic positive. So you've got the whole gamut covered. I would think in the end that you might see that Hurricane Sandy, from an economic perspective, not a personal perspective, may end up being a slight positive, but that it's going to take several years for us to see the end result of what happened in the Northeast Quarter through Sandy.
So basically maybe a negative impact
short term
for the fourth quarter, but then you could see a positive impact to economic growth.
Absolutely. We've all seen the pictures. There's one particular of a parking lot, I think, with the cars floating up the middle of the circular well that you use to go in and out of the lot. You know, people are going to have to buy new cars.
Right.
People are rebuilding houses. But that money is coming from savings for the most part, or a part of it is. So, it goes both ways in this case.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Luther.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has any questions, please email me at david.lundgren@hancockbank.com. And we do have one question in so far, and Jeff alluded or talked a little bit about the quantitative easing program and its impact on bonds. This question is in regards to the impact on stocks. And I think, you know, what we've seen historically, John, and maybe that this is where the question's going, is there's been a positive impact from the previous quantitative easing programs. I know we're still early in the game. What are your expectations on this new program and its impact on stocks?
Eventually, the quantitative easing and the forcing down of low interest rates must lead to increased economic activity and greater employment and spending and borrowing and lending and everything else that goes with a more vibrant economy. to the extent that that happens down the road, it's going to be positive for the stock market. Currently, of course, it's not happening, and the Fed, in effect, has been pushing all the strings. So, you know, while QE certainly had a great impact on the stock market when it was first implemented, QE1, so to speak, in the midst of the 2008-2009 crash, subsequent QE programs have resulted in lesser gains as far as the stock market is concerned, and we have probably reached the point of no return at this point, or low return in the sense that the economy may not respond very quickly. So if the economy doesn't respond at this point and we don't get some improvement in growth and corporate earnings, then QE becomes, you know, while not a negative, it's certainly not a positive. So it might hold the market up to the extent that if earnings are relatively weak, the competition for stocks in the form of low interest rates and low yields on bonds is not very great. So I guess in that sense it's a positive, but in terms of pushing the market considerably higher at this point, it probably is not likely to do that.
Okay. We do have one other question, but it's in regards to estate taxes and taxes on dividends and capital gains. But we're going to save that one for Thursday when we'll know a little bit more. So just a reminder to everyone, our post-election call will be Thursday, November 8th from 3 to 3:30. So please join us for that call, and thank you for joining us today.